How's everybody doing? Good? Yeah. As I said, I'm George Overflow, George Beach from Stack Overflow. And today we're talking about logs. We have lots of logs that we come in, from our web logs to our system logs to our network logs to everything else. And what we need to be able to do is aggregate them and correlate them and figure out what's going on with our systems, especially as systems grow. You know, when you start off with two or three systems, you're like, okay, I can go hop around servers and kind of manually correlate things, and it takes 15 extra minutes. But when you're at 200 or 300 systems, that's nearly impossible, and matching everything up doesn't work. So the logs we're talking about, we have logs coming off our CDN provider. We have logs coming off of our Linux servers, our Windows servers. We have web requests that come directly into our infrastructure that we need to log through our HA proxy load balancers. We have logs from our network gear that we need to come in. And a few other places, NetFlow logs, DMARC logs, logs from various systems. And as you're trying to go through and look and see what's going on, you have an incident, you have an outage, you want to say, what happened at that point in time? You know, what was going on with my web server and the load balancer? Was there some sort of communication problem there, or either of them throwing errors? And without having a central place to correlate and aggregate those logs, it's nearly impossible at a larger scale. So just kind of a baseline of what we're looking at. Stack Overflow gets 1.3 billion page views per month. That's not all of our HTTP requests. We get approximately 500 to 600 million HTTP requests per day. So our page views are slightly different. We use it as a different metric. That doesn't include stuff like tracking and web sockets and all of these other things around running our site. In addition to all of those web requests, we have approximately 350 servers, 400 servers. A lot of those are virtual. A bunch of them are physical. We have two data centers that we have to correlate logs from. For us, that's not so much a problem since we're in an active standby setup. So for the most part, the passive data center doesn't really have that much going on besides the normal event logs. And we do technically have a third data center, but we don't care about it. It's in Oregon. So we're looking at it and we go, we just had an event. What do we do? Before we started building these systems, we just kind of went like this. Holy, I don't know what to do. I'm going to log into 10 different servers with Windows and Linux and look at syslog and event log and maybe log into my network gear and hope the buffer hasn't run out yet. And really, it's not fun to do that at any kind of scale. But it's okay. We've gone through and we've built some processes and systems that allow us to pull in all of these logs. What we decided to do was have a two-tonged approach. So for our web request logs, we went and we built a custom application that massages the logs as they come in, adds some data, some interesting data from our side, and geolocation and some tracking information, so we can correlate it a little bit better, and put that into a Microsoft SQL Server. And then for a secondary place, that same process splits logs, it puts it in the SQL Server, and then it puts it in also into an Elasticsearch server that's part of our Elk stack, which is also where all of our system event logs go, our network logs, all of those other things that allow that correlation. This water's not going to last me. So the first step in the process is it comes through, hits our load balancer, hits our CDN, and then we have our traffic processing server. And we very intentionally named it this way for a little bit of laugh. What it does, as I said, it takes the web logs and it massages them. It takes the raw request logs from our CDN and from the raw syslog message from HAProxy, and it goes through and it does a bit of translation, splits out the route, the host, does some calculations, does it count as a page view? So now we have a SQL column that says this is a page view. As I said, geolocation, timings, all sorts of data gets into there. And this process just constantly runs. It spits, as I said, spits out SQL Server, spits into this Logstash. And we named it that way so we could say we have the TPS reports. Because we thought it was funny. And yeah, well, you only get the cover sheet. It's in the mail. Because you got to have a little bit of fun when you're doing this stuff. If you don't laugh a little bit, what's the point? So we've got those logs, the custom logs coming in and being massaged. Now what's the next step? Well, we've got our Windows logs. I don't know how many of you interact with the Windows Event Viewer regularly, but it's entirely painful. There's the Event X new system that kind of works on some things and is half implemented across the Microsoft line of products, but everything kind of still writes to Windows Event logs. And how do you get those logs into your Logstash? Well, there's many options. There's some options out there. Lumberjack, I believe, says they can do it, but if you go and look, it's actually just reading regular files off the disk. And Windows Event logs are not regular files. They're binary XML encoded weirdness from 1990, and you can't just point something at it and say, open this file stream and pull it in and send it over here. There's other things. I forgot the name of the products off the top of my head, and I should have wrote a note for myself. But there's other products, and we looked at them, and they were really heavy. They were like 30 meg installers to go through and process it, and we said, we can do this better. So what we actually went through and did is we just wrote a tiny little C# program. It might be Go now. I don't remember. I haven't looked at it in a while. But what it does is it hooks the Windows event log event, says, hey, I've got a new log, parses the log and sends it all, and does some transcodes it to JSON and sends it to Logstash. And I think it's less than 100K or something program, very lightweight, just sits there and runs and runs and runs, sending all our Windows event logs. So now we've got our web logs and we've got our Windows event logs, and so if we have a problem between our load balancer and our Windows servers, our IIS servers, we can kind of start correlating events here. And we slowly start to kind of get in and be able to look at things. So now we have Windows logs, web logs. The next thing up is our Linux and networking logs. Those are so much easier. We just syslog them. You just point syslog at Logstash, and it does the right thing. You can go through and write some filters depending on what version of Logstash you're doing, add some tagging, and you're done. And it sits there and it processes it. So that brings us to Logstash. Awesome. So Logstash, how many of you are familiar with the Logstash, the Elk Stack? Have you used it? Awesome. For those that haven't, it's basically a Splunk replacement that you can run on-prem, open source. It's essentially three parts. It's Logstash, which is the processor. It's Elasticsearch, which is the database backend, document backend, and it's Kibana, which is the front-end interface to it. So what we do is we go in and use Logstash to parse and process a bunch of our logs. Sometimes we'll just throw them right into Elasticsearch. So for some super high volume things that we've written code for, like the traffic processing server, that can just write directly into, that can either spit out JSON or it can write directly into Elasticsearch for a little bit of performance, and you're not bottlenecking on Logstash, which if you're sending a lot of data to, it takes a lot of tuning. And sometimes it's easier to just put in Elasticsearch in the right format. We try and keep processing in Logstash to a minimum just to not bog things down. We want to, if we have anything really heavy duty we want to do, we want to move that off into another process or generate that at the source of the logs if we can. And then so I've mixed these slides up, so we're just going to roll with it. So just a little bit about the hardware we're running to do this. So you know, we're ingesting a lot of data. We're ingesting half a terabyte or more a day of data into these systems. So we have the SQL servers, a large SQL server. We use 4 terabyte Intel NVMe drives for our recent data. So like 99% of the time, we're worried about today or yesterday or the day before. So we put that data onto the NVMe drive. And then we have a process that rolls that data off through SQL Server. Basically, what we do is we create a table a day, and we roll that. And then we have 43 terabytes of spinning hard drives in that same server. We're using Dell 730 XDs, so it's got 2 OS drives in the back, it's got 24 drives in the front, and it's got PCI slots. So we keep our historical logs on the large spinning hard drives, and we keep them as long as we possibly can. And we'll just roll them off the back. If somebody wants something longer than what we can keep on the SQL server, we will. They can either go to Logstash, which holds a lot more data, or we can go and grab the logs. We keep all of the raw original logs, and we back them up to Amazon Glacier and tape. Yeah.
Why do you use SQL Server at all? It seems like it's just collecting.
So there. Yes, there are a couple of reasons we do that. Number one. We are able to build tools and applications for our non-technical users and build them right into the administrative controls of our site. So like if our community team wants to go and look for a spam bot, we can build a tool that just builds right into our website. It's a C# site, it's based on SQL Server. We don't have to do anything special besides query a different SQL Server source for them. Also, it allows a little bit more self-service from developers who are used to running SQL Server. So it's in both places because there's utilities to using both places, and that's why we use it in SQL Server. So the Logstash cluster. We built out the Logstash cluster 3 years ago. We built it to last 5 years, I think, was our estimate at the time we built it. We used Dell R720 XDs with 3.5-inch drives in the front. Each server has 12 4-terabyte drives. We've split that into 3 RAID zeros, and we use a feature in Logstash that goes through and basically load balances across mount points in the server, in the OS. So we did this so that if we lose a drive or a set of drives, we only have to replicate 12 terabytes of data instead of 45 terabytes of data when we're backfilling if something happens. It's all spinning hard drives. For those of you that worked with Elasticsearch or any kind of cluster document database, you know why you should not use 6 servers. We made that mistake. We just didn't, but you know, you have that moment you go, I think this is a great idea. It fits our capacity. Let's go. And you don't really think about everything, including some of the pain points I'll get to later. So these servers just sit there and spin. What we do is we also run Logstash on all 6 servers, and we use a VIP that can bounce between any 6 servers, so Logstash is highly available, and each instance just connects to the local Elasticsearch instance to put things in. So if we lose a server, we'll keep the VIP will move and we'll keep on collecting data. And it's a little bit overkill. We probably could have gotten away with two or three servers being Logstash endpoints. So we've got all this data, and we've got an outage, and we've got an error, and we want to find that one segment of logs. Well, we now have, you know, half a terabyte of data to sort through. What do we do to get through that? The first place a lot of people will go will be the SQL Server, especially if it's a web-facing outage. T-SQL is very comfortable to almost everybody in our environment. They can go in, do a query. If it's for the last day or so, it's going to be very fast. We're using some new technologies in SQL 2016, like clustered indexes, that kind of let us shrink the data and query it a little bit faster. We're able to build tools against SQL Server for these type of data. Now, if we want to correlate that to a system event log, we can't do that in SQL Server because we only store web traffic in there. So what do we want to do if we need to get to SQL Server data? Well, we also do run Kibana. Kibana allows us to correlate data fairly easily. We also use Grafana a lot. So if we have an event that happens, we can go in and say, look for this system message and show me everything around that time. And Kibana has queries the Elasticsearch index, which has all the Logstash data, which lets us go through and say, well, our Redis server had some sort of event, or our network gear was starting to transmit errors on a port. Using Kibana is a little bit more difficult, especially if you're not familiar with the query syntax. It's much different than SQL Server, but it gives us much more information. We also have an annotation system that we can access through there, so we can see if somebody did a build or if somebody took a load balancer out of rotation at the same time, as long as they documented it. It's less accessible to teams outside of SRE and IT, just because of the query syntax and the slowness of fetching data and really needing to know what you're looking for. So some pain points. This is always the fun point part of this. The first pain point was we built our Elasticsearch cluster with 6 servers. Can anybody guess about how many split brain situations we had with that setup? There are ways around it through configuration, and that's what we're doing right now, setting min-masters and a few other things. But I think the first month we had that set up, we had about 20 split brain situations. Luckily, we weren't using it in production. We were just kind of figuring out and building out the cluster. But if you ever go and build something like this, by 5 servers or by 7 servers, by an odd number of servers, you don't want split brains. They suck and basically make you restart the entire process. Another major pain point is kind of figuring out how to get this volume of data into SQL Server. When we first started looking at this type of thing, you know, we had to build an application that could ingest logs fast enough and not get backed up. We had to figure out how to write to disk fast enough. We had to figure out all of these different things. And a lot of them we just solved with hardware. We threw more power at the problem. We threw NVMe disks at it, which are incredibly fast and incredibly expensive. But now you can write to disk almost as fast as you can write to memory. Your limits there are much reduced. Um, And some of the other points were how, so one of the most painful things until we switched off our Cisco firewalls was ASAs don't send well-formed syslog messages. Awesome. No, that's all right. It's my fault for not getting two glasses. So I don't know if any of you have ever tried to parse an ASA log, but depending on what action it is logging, it's going to send it in a different syslog format, and there will be random characters that don't match with any syslog standard whatsoever, and writing a grep in Logstash for that is incredibly painful if you can do it at all, even with a lot of the online tools. When I was going through, I was like, awesome, somebody's gone and written all the Cisco stuff. And it was Nexus, and it was Catalyst, and it was ACS, and it was not ASA. I think I spent about a month and a half trying to get it right myself. And we ended up moving away from Cisco as a firewall platform for other reasons. And then a pretty big pain point is just the volume of data. Luckily, at that time, we were transitioning to 10 gig. So one of the first things we moved to 10 gig was our big data type systems so that we can push all of those logs in. I forgot to look up the statistics, but we're generating between inbound logs, Elasticsearch replication, querying, well over a gig a second between all of those things so that we can have accessible logs. And if you're on 1 gig, you're just sitting there fighting yourself trying to make things fast and not drop logs and go through. Which nobody likes, and we want to capture everything. When you go through and you query the logs, one of the things we're actually running into right now is we're outgrowing our current setup, so it just stops responding for minutes on end, which I am not dealing with. I don't know if Mark's here, but he's been kind of saddled with that. So basically, we've got too much data now, and when we go and try and query things, Elasticsearch just kind of stalls. And we're trying to figure out, trying to do some roll-ups and move to newer versions. But, that's slow going. So, here's more. So a little happiness. This dog kind of is, you're, yeah. The 172 in the Elasticsearch clusters. We allocate 100 gigs to the Elasticsearch heap, and I think 30 some gigs to the Logstash instance. I know best practices kind of run like 5 or 6 smaller heaps, but we've got some powerful servers, and we may end up tuning that later. That made the most sense for us at the time. And what was I going to say? I don't know. But we have very powerful servers. We got very happy little puppies going on. I like to imagine that whoever's working on Elasticsearch is a cute little puppy with his hands up on his side of his head going, what's going on? So what all of this really means is that we've got all of these systems, and I wish this was longer than a 40-minute talk so I could really go deep into each of the individual technologies, because there's a lot there. I'm just trying to give you guys a high-level overview of what's going on. But what this really means is we're able to go through and query and evaluate events so that when we have an outage, we can figure out where the most likely part of our stack is that is broken. So we want to be able to eliminate 99% of stuff. We want to be able to say, no, our network gear is running fine. Was at least not reporting errors in the logs. We want to be able to say, hey, somebody took a load balancer out and switched to another one and we're having issues. If we switch back, or do the issues go away? We want to be able to have all of this data and be able to sort through it. And it's very difficult sometimes, especially when you're not really starting from, when you're starting with something's running slow or the site's kind of down. So that's pretty much what we've got. You thought this was going to be a cat. So yeah, I went a little bit faster than I thought, so lots of times for questions. And any more questions about how we do things, yeah.
SQL Server, do you use permissions and files to do block swaps, or do you just raw write the table and then catalog the swap it out?
Can I ask you to repeat the question? And if follow on questions, you can use the microphone because we're recording in context.
Yes, so do we use partitions and file groups to swap out? I believe so. I don't really handle that part of it. One of our DBAs handles it, but I believe that's how it's done with partitions and file groups. Anything else?
Hi, Brett Taylor from Linode. We just rolled out ours, and we are sticking with flat files and collecting everything on the file system first, and I thought it was interesting that you're doing MySQL for kind of doing the same thing. How did you land on MySQL or SQL Server, whatever you're using, mm-hmm. as your data dump?
So we really like SQL Server. We're a Microsoft shop. So There's a few things. One was it's something we're comfortable with. It's something we knew we could get to do this very well, and it gave us kind of that flexibility to kind of do that relational querying when we're troubleshooting. At least that the web segment of things, and everybody's kind of comfortable with T-SQL in our environment, so it made a lot of sense.
Great talk. I'm interested in exploring a little bit more. You talked about the 300 terabytes that you're working with in one of the particular areas. Mm-hmm. In some of the space I'm working on that's tied with deep learning, machine learning, analytics around workloads and stuff, we're actually starting to look at dealing with petabytes of data, some of it real-time, some of it's historical. And I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are in extending and supporting that kind of an environment.
So that turns into some interesting conversations, right? By real-time, do you mean, you know, it's accessible in 100 milliseconds, or real-time it's accessible in like 3 seconds because that's what people are comfortable with? I'm not sure how, for our use cases, slower is fine on the Elasticsearch cluster, so we'll probably just keep scaling out. For faster use cases, I'd almost look at something with tiered storage. Depending on the way your data looks and your access model, you would probably have some flash storage on the immediate tier and the hot tier and go to maybe some 10K drives and then go to, you know, cheap 7200 RPM drives for the vast majority of it is probably what I'd look at first. Or you could do something like roll the data off into another cluster or something like that.
Hi, I'm Patrick Kelso, British Telecom.
Yeah.
I'm just curious what the use cases are for Elasticsearch. Like, what sort of queries are you doing? Is it just, hey, we had an event, give me all the logs 30 minutes either side, or is it going deeper than that, searching on particular types of queries or security?
So the answer is it depends, as is always the answer. It really depends on what happened. and what other systems we have in place. Because in some instances, we have different systems like a packet inspector that may be quicker, or it may not be. Generally, we're looking at correlating events across multiple systems in a time frame. And I'm sure other people on the team use it differently, depending on what they're doing. It's just impossible to keep up with what everybody's doing. Anything else? Any other questions not related to Elasticsearch or Logstash?
Are you looking at any other solutions for the cold storage indexing and searching?
No, not right now. I'm sure as we grow, we'll need to find different solutions, but what we have right now works for us, and we haven't hit a limit yet. So we always keep our eye open on things, because generally when you hit that limit, you hit it hard and fast, but yeah, not right now.
Are you using any other metric collection monitoring tools in conjunction with Elasticsearch Logstash?
Yes, so we have our homegrown monitoring system, Boson, that we use for metric collection. Generally how that would tie in is we would pull a Grafana dashboard with some of the Logstash kind of points of, you know, there were 10 302s at this point where we saw a spike in CPU or something like that.
I have a question in an area that kind of crosses over maybe into the other things.
Sure.
Maybe, I don't know if this is an interest area of yours, but Internet of Things is one that I definitely have a big interest in. Have you looked at using Logstash specifically on monitoring microservices tied to Internet of Things? I'm kind of curious what your thoughts.
I haven't. Mm-hmm. It would probably be interesting. We don't use microservices at Stack, so it's not been something I've really delved into as far as a thought exercise. But
what about on like Internet of Things monitoring agents? Like in the data center, for example, we might have a lot of different sensors around there, specifically for the data centers, that could be extended to other things outside of the data center.
Yeah. One of the things I keep thinking of doing is building a little piece of equipment that sits on the top of the rack that's basically goes and says, I know what servers are in the rack, and I'm going to go and look at the rack and see if there's anything there, and basically red, yellow, green, and pulling data from multiple places for that. I'm trying to find some free time. But, yeah, definitely could do some interesting things there.
I was just curious what your experience has been with Glacier for deep storage. My org's been talking about using it a bit, and I was wondering if you had ever had to actually do recovery off of it and how that went for you, because I haven't heard much firsthand as far as that goes.
I know we've done test recoveries, and they've gone okay. I know we've talked about doing another test recovery. So our Glacier usage is newer for us. What we've done while we're transitioning to prove it out is we kept our old tape-based backup system running, and they're both running in sync. But I think we're fairly confident in Glacier right now, and it's been good. But you know, pulling that data back can get kind of expensive. But then if you only need it once a year, hopefully less.
Right. Ideally, you're not doing it too often.
Yeah. And what really pushed us there is the ability to lock the files for a time period, so I think we have it set for 90 days. Anywhere can delete that file, except for maybe somebody in Amazon with direct file system access.
Nice. Sounds pretty good, both to keep it from being tampered with, but also to make sure you keep the sort of intermediary stage in good shape.
Yep.
Cool. Thank you.
Nothing? All right. Cool. I'm around if you want to talk about this or anything. I'd be more than happy to talk much deeper into what we're doing than I could in a 30-minute talk. But thanks for being here.